When we left off last time, we saw that God had made a covenant with Abraham to give him a large family, to use one specific descendant of that family to bless all the families of the earth. But Abraham asked, "How do I know you'll keep your promise? I don't even have a child." Now, if you haven't watched that devotion, by the way, it's named God's Promise to Abraham. Stop here, go do that right now. You absolutely must understand that promise to Abraham before moving on. If you have watched it, then you know God put himself alone on the line to fulfill his promises. Unfortunately, instead of waiting on the Lord and trusting in God's perfect timing, Abraham and Sarah decided God needed their help. And what follows in Genesis as Moses sort of unfolds the stories of the patriarchs is one failure after another. That's something that I love about the Bible. It is frank and honest in its presentation of even righteous people. We're a mess. Even the noble patriarchs, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, they're flawed individuals. Humanity is completely without a hero until the coming of Jesus. Now, Genesis 16 is an ugly story. Now, surprisingly, it's not the ugliest story in the book. We're probably going to get that to the next devotion, but it's bad enough because Abraham is 86 years old and Sarah is 76 years old. They're thinking it's impossible to have this promised child. So Sarah, just imagine this. Sarah hatches a plan asking Abraham to impregnate her servant, an Egyptian girl named Hagar. And immediately, this Franken family starts to put the fun in dysfunctional, right? Hagar gets pregnant and gives birth to a baby boy named Ishmael. Sarah gets mad. Hagar teases Sarah about her barrenness. Abraham finds himself dealing with his angry wife and a troublesome baby mama, right? The question we're meant to ask is, could the child of that union be the son of God's promise to Abraham? Now, you need to see that Abraham hoped so. He essentially asked God that Ishmael would be the child of promise. Look at Genesis 17, verses 18 and 19. Abraham said unto God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." And God said, "Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son indeed, and you shall call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him." God doesn't need their help. He alone is going to fulfill the covenant. And so Ishmael is blessed by God, but he is not that covenant son. Sarah and Abraham were wrong in thinking that God couldn't give them a child. God was waiting until it was clear that only God could give them a child. According to God's promise, Isaac is born. 14 years later, Abraham is 100. Sarah is 90. That's got to be God's doing, right? So God bypassed Ishmael and chose Isaac. And we know this because that's what God told Abraham and because God repeats that Abrahamic covenant with Isaac. In Genesis 26, Isaac, we find, is making some of the same mistakes his father made, and God speaks to him. And look at this. Tell me if it sounds familiar. Genesis 26, starting at verse 3, God tells him, "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For unto you and unto your seed will I give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swore unto Abraham your father. And I will make your seed to multiply as the stars of the heaven. And I will give unto your seed all these countries, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." That's a repeat of the Abrahamic covenant, right? Now, it's being passed to his son Isaac, and God says, "In your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." The obedience of Abraham and Sarah, their questionable practices, their their sin and mistakes. Those are not overwhelming obstacles for God. All the while we're reading this story, we're seeing God overcome every obstacle in the way of his plan. Genesis 12 through 50 unfolds the story of the patriarchs, and we find their wives being taken into harems of evil kings. We see lies and unfaithfulness. We see natural disasters like famines and droughts. All the while, the promise of God seems so unlikely to be fulfilled. God told Abraham, I'm going to give you this land. But by the time Sarah, his wife, dies, Abraham doesn't even own land to bury her in. He has to haggle with a heathen man in order to have a burial place. The promise that Abraham and his seed would be a blessing to all nations. Well, the interaction they're having with nations in Genesis seems like they're more the cause of trouble than the cause of blessing. So in a way, just like Abraham and Sarah saw God's promise as unlikely, as we read this, we're being called on to see just how unlikely, how impossible it all seems. It would take a sovereign, all-powerful God to accomplish his purpose in these people. Nobody else would be able to. And that's what we see in Genesis. This is the way God has chosen to bring redemption to fallen humanity. God's chosen to fulfill his own promises by choosing individuals to use as instruments of his grace. In one generation, he chooses Abraham's son Isaac and not Ishmael. He brings Isaac into that covenant of redemption. And then Isaac has two sons of his own named Jacob and Esau. Now, we can say the family is learning some lessons. Isaac and his wife Rebekah are met with the same challenges as Abraham and Sarah. They're childless. To Isaac's credit, he doesn't make the same mistake. Isaac and Rebekah wait 20 years for God to fulfill his promise. And finally, Rebekah, after 20 years, is pregnant. But there's a problem. Look at Genesis 25. And the fetuses, obviously that's not what it says, the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? In other words, this doesn't feel like an answer to prayer. This doesn't seem like God's promise being fulfilled. And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, God's making a choice between these two brothers, these twin brothers. And God's choice is going to be a perfect picture of part of his plan of redemption, the doctrine of election. Think of it. Two boys, twins, they have the same mother, they have the same father, they share the same DNA, they shared the same womb. They heard the same stories and grew up in the same tent. You cannot get two more similar people. And yet God has identified who he has chosen in his sovereignty and whom he has not. The Apostle Paul later is going to flash back to this scene in Genesis and use it to prove the truth of God's elective purpose. In Romans 9, Paul refers to this event, and he says, not this only, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calls. It was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. We're often stunned by that statement, Esau have I hated. But really, that's easy to explain. God's hatred of Esau is not based in what Esau would become or what Esau would do. Paul's clear about that. He says these children, they're not yet born. They haven't done any good or evil. There's nothing of that sort that we should make the basis for this. It should teach us in Esau that sin is not just something we do. Sin is something we are. We don't become a liar by telling a lie. We lie because liars are what we are, right? You don't become a thief by stealing. You steal if you're a thief at heart. And so God has every right to hate Esau and every other wicked, rebellious individual in humanity because that's what we are. Remember, the thoughts of our heart, the thoughts of the imagination of our hearts are only evil continually. What's truly shocking is not that God hated Esau. The shock is that God loved Jacob. That's not who you and I would have loved. If you look at these two, Esau is a manly man. He's rugged. He's a hunter. Jacob is a weaselly little mama's boy who doesn't want to leave the tents. But the process of choosing, not based on merit or based on deeds, but solely on God's prerogative, God's elective purpose, that's a vital part of God's plan of redemption in Scripture. And so let me just say, for all of my Christian brothers and sisters who are offended by this doctrine of election, you ought to embrace it. Don't explain it away. There's those who dislike the idea of election and tell us that Paul is talking about national election. And it's true. God has chosen Israel as a nation. Moses isn't hiding that. But he's also showing us that election is personal, isn't he? I mean, what have we seen? God chose Abraham and not his brothers Nahor or Haran. And then God chose Isaac and not Ishmael. God chose Jacob and not Esau. These are people. National election didn't happen outside of personal election. God chose people in order to bring them into his redemptive plan. And it isn't that he chooses good people, because there aren't any good people in that sense. Remember, humanity has no worthwhile hero until the coming of Jesus. But here's where Moses is taking us. God bypasses Esau and chooses Jacob. And here's what God tells him. He gives Jacob a vision of a ladder stretched into heaven. And then he tells him, and this is going to sound familiar, in Genesis 28, behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon you lie, to you will I give it, and to your seed. And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. In Genesis, Moses is starting us in this story on the journey to the Son of God, that Son of promise himself. Because it's God's elective choice to bless all the families of the earth, every kind of person in every kind of place. He doesn't have a plan of redemption that only includes a certain color of people or a single family of people. He doesn't have a plan that only includes good people. The hope for you and me is that he's willing to forgive and redeem even bad people. And we see that in these men, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. God chooses to save flawed, fallen sinners through the promises fulfilled in his perfect, sinless Son, Jesus, who is the fulfillment of these promises.